How many times have we looked at a guy that gets his name called in the NFL draft and say he is irreplaceable? And yet the next guy comes, and in some cases, some crazy cases, he's actually better. Hello and welcome in. It's Always College Football. Today is April 29th, and we appreciate you guys coming to us from wherever it is that you're coming to us from, whether that's the podcast platform on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or if you're here with us via the ESPN YouTube channel, hit that thumbs up button, continue to like, rate, and subscribe. It helps us out, and it really helps out the show. I'm Greg McElroy, and we have a really fun show for you today. We now have the NFL draft that has concluded, and it was a great draft, especially for Michigan, especially if you like seeing 13 players have their names called from your alma mater. It was terrific for them, but they weren't the only ones. Texas had a bunch. Bama had a bunch. Washington had a bunch. Florida State had a bunch. What we're going to do today is not talk necessarily about NFL draft picks and fits and whether or not teams aced the needs that they had in the NFL draft. What we're going to do is look at it from a college perspective. And we're going to go through team by team and tell you who is the most difficult player to replace on offense and on defense. And in some cases, there's only defensive players that were drafted. So we'll tell you the most difficult player to place overall for some of the teams as well. So a lot that we need to get to, a little NFL draft, but from a college perspective, next on Always College Football. Well, the NFL draft is in the books. And as you guys know, here at Always College Football, we're about college football. We're servicing the college football fan. So it would be fun to go back through and give grades to the NFL teams based on how they picked and what all went down. But I don't feel like that does us a lot of good. I think you guys and me, frankly, as a college fan that is trying to focus exclusively on the fan that listens to college football, I think the best way of approaching it is by going through and trying to figure out how can these teams adequately replace the stars that just got drafted in the NFL draft. I think that's the best way to go about it. So that's kind of been my philosophy over the years. I do think there is a casual interest because everybody listening to this show knows that the NFL draft can really help recruiting. But at the end of the day, you wish your guys well, you want them to do well, but are you that concerned about what team they go to or what number they got drafted? I don't know. I really don't know. So we have kind of steered away from NFL draft projections in the past because I don't know if it serves the college fan. But what does serve the college fan is talking about the guys that could potentially be replacing some of the best players off the board. Let's start, though, just overall 30,000-foot perspective. The 2024 NFL draft was once again dominated by the SEC, 59 draft picks. The next closest league had 43. But usually that next closest league is the Big Ten. In some rare cases, maybe it's the ACC, but it's for the most part always been Big Ten and ACC. What it hasn't been is the Pac-12, not at least in a little while. And the Pac-12 actually had the second most draft picks in the draft this past season. I think in large part due to the accomplishments of Washington, Oregon, SC had the number one player picked. So it's not crazy surprising to see those teams at the top. We're not used to seeing 10 guys get drafted from Washington. So to think it's the last year of the Pac-12, the last year of the Pac-12, they got a team in the playoff, they got a team in the national championship, and then they just had the second most draft picks out of all the conferences. So it's pretty amazing when you take that into account that, hey, sayonara Pac-12, we love you, we appreciate you, but man, you went out on a real high note, on a real bang, that's for sure. The Big Ten had 42 players taken, followed closely by the ACC. So those teams, Pac-12 43, Big Ten 42, ACC 41, and the Big 12, this is a massive number for the Big 12, in large part due to what Texas was able to provide, but the Big 12 came in at 31 draft picks. Independents had 8, but we noticed and we've talked about the gap that exists right now between the Power 5 and the G5. And it's becoming more and more evident in the NFL draft just how wide that gap is. Now, it's not fair, but it's the realities of the transfer portal, and it's the realities of the NIL. The group of five combined, had 18 players picked. 18. Six for the Sun Belt, five for the American, three for Conference USA, two for the Mountain West, and two for the MAC. One of those in the MAC was Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, who got drafted in the first round. So it's really becoming more and more difficult for G5 programs to retain their top talent because the big fish are coming in, swooping in, grabbing those players, and then stockpiling their own roster with great depth and premier players at some of those positions. As far as schools are concerned, the NFL draft was very, very good to the Michigan Wolverines. When you hear the number 13 players picked, remember Georgia had the most ever a couple years back when they had 15 players picked. I actually thought that Michigan was going to surpass Georgia. Now, not necessarily as it related to first round draft picks, not guys at the top of the board. But if you look at guys second, third, fourth, fifth round, I thought there was going to be a king's ransom of Michigan players that were picked between picks 60 and say 220. I thought there'd be a ton because one, it's a great culture, great players, very physical, tough-minded head coach that's going to demand a lot of his players. So I just thought there was going to be a ton. There were 18 players that were invited to the combine from the Michigan Wolverines, but they still led all draft picks with 13. Texas came in at second with 11, Bama at 10, Florida State at 10, Washington at 10, followed closely by Oregon and Georgia, who both came in at 8. So what we're going to do today, we're going to go through some of the top teams as far as draft picks, pick out their most difficult player to replace on offense and their most difficult player to replace on defense and what it looks like right now for those guys that are needing to be replaced. All right, so let's dive into it. Let's start with the Michigan Wolverines. They had the most players picked. First national championship since 1997, first outright title since 1948, and 18 players that were invited to the combine. Yeah, I'd say it was safe to assume they were going to have a bunch of people that were selected throughout the draft. JJ McCarthy was the first off the board to the Minnesota Vikings at 10th overall. A lot of people thought it might be as early as 5. A lot of people thought it might be at 4. But no, JJ McCarthy comes off the board, I think, to a great situation with the Minnesota Vikings. I think he's the most difficult player to replace. Now, part of that has to do with the fact that I'm looking at the quarterbacks that are vying for that position. And while I have tons of confidence in Alex Orji's athleticism, I think he is a stud athletically. I don't know yet. I don't know at the moment if he's going to be able to produce those three or four timely throws that JJ McCarthy seemed to always produce. If he needs to get out of a jam, if he needs to run, if he needs to create, if he needs to buy time, if he needs to play and go play scramble drill, he's outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. But will he be as decisive as JJ McCarthy was throughout managing his way to an incredible win-loss record in college and ultimately the national championship this year? Now, it's not just Alex Orji that's vying for the position. You also have Davis Warren, who appears like he is probably closer to the starting role than I anticipated coming in. And when he gets healthy, we'll get a better evaluation of Jack Tuttle, who's the veteran, has a big arm, can throw it, throws a really pretty ball. Maybe he finds his way into the competition as well. So it's really a three-way battle for the quarterback spot right now for the Michigan Wolverines, and any of the three will have massive shoes to fill at the quarterback spot. As far as the defense is concerned, and this was really hard for me. This was really difficult because if you think at all the options that Michigan has to replace on the defensive side, Chris Jenkins was actually the first defensive player off the board. He got picked in the second round. Mike Sainristil followed him and picked 50. Jenkins was pick 49. He got drafted in the second round. Junior Colson was drafted as well. You had a bunch of guys drafted later in the process as well. Michael Barrett and a couple others, Jalen Harrell. So they had really good players that were off the board. And a couple guys didn't even get drafted. I was surprised to see Braden McGregor not get drafted. I thought he was a really good player. Times a significant difference maker for what was a very deep defensive group. And I'm not concerned looking at Michigan. And this is crazy because you think about how good that defensive line was. Chris Jenkins, to me, is not the most difficult player to replace. Sure, he was the first player picked off the defensive side of the football, but I'm not sure he's going to be the most difficult to replace. I think they're that deep at defensive tackle, and they'll be that disruptive at defensive tackle again this year, even in his absence. I think Mike Sainristil still is actually the toughest guy to replace. I look at what they have at linebacker. I look at what they have at corner. I know they're going to be good at those positions. But I think about the instincts and the timely plays that were always seemingly made by Mike Sainristil, and I feel like his contributions in that defense were really significant. Now, to see a guy get drafted at 50th overall, he's not huge. He's not 6'2". He's not a freak show where he's all jacked up and can play linebacker, can play safety, can play corner, can play all his positions. Like, he's just a great football player. And I think he'll be a really good pro. But I think he always seemed to make the right play at the right time to make sure that that defense never dropped off at all when he was playing inside or outside. So Mike Sainristil, I think, is the most difficult player to replace. And they have a bunch of guys right now. Michigan has a bunch of guys in the back end that are all vying for playing time. But that guy has some big shoes that need to be filled. We'll move on to the Texas Longhorns. Now, 2 years ago, think about this. Think about the Texas Longhorns and the amount of access that they have to players. 300 plus guys out of the state of Texas sign Division I letters of intent every year. 300 plus. In some cases, it's 320. In some cases, it's 330. But for all intents and purposes, 300 plus players from high school football in the state of Texas will play Division I football. And to think that 2 years ago, Steve Sarkisian's team that he had just inherited had zero players selected in the NFL draft. Zero. The most that Texas has had since the draft changed to a 7-round format is actually 11. That's this year. Now, their all-time high, of course, was back when in 84, when they had 12 rounds, they had 17 players picked, which is absurd. But this is the most players they've ever had drafted in the traditional 7-round format. And to think that they had the second most players drafted, and while some of those guys, some, were inherited by Steve Sarkisian, a handful actually, he was able to develop 3-star players like Byron Murphy, like Tavondre Sweat. Byron Murphy was a 3-star player coming out of the recruiting services when he signed. Sweat, also a 3-star player. And according to 247 back in 2019, he was the 605th player in the country. Well, they were early in their career. They rotated in a lot. They got better and better and better to the point where they're the best tackle tandem in all of college football. So looking at what Texas lost, we also know that they lost a bunch of wide receivers. A.D. Mitchell, Jatavion Sanders. They all have Jatavion Sanders, of course, played tight end. You also lose, and I think, the best running back in the draft who was taken there at the top of the draft board. Texas lost an awful lot, but offensively speaking, I think the most difficult player for them to replace is Xavier Worthy. Now, he wasn't necessarily their most crazy productive guy over the last couple of years, had bouts with random injuries, but you think about his contributions to the return game. You think about his contributions in catch and run situations. Think about how creative Steve Sarkisian would get with some of his calls and play calls and how hard it would be to be able to get it to a guy that can create so much run after catch. I thought Xavier Worthy, albeit not the biggest guy in the world, but I think he was just a flat out phenomenal football player. Phenomenal football player. And I think that his contributions will be difficult. Now you look at what Texas added in the portal. They went to the portal, got 3 game-changing guys, and maybe Isaiah Bond is that Xavier Worthy. Maybe he is. I hope for Texas's sake that he is. But I think when you look at just how Xavier Worthy would impact the game in the catch-and-run situation and in the return game, he is the biggest piece that you have to replace on the offensive side. I think they have plenty of options over there, by the way, at wide receiver. I don't think there's going to be a ton of drop-off at all. And to think too, people are looking at Texas and people are not picking Michigan to win the national championship. They're not. Why? Because of how many departures they had off this past year's season. But a lot of people are thinking that Texas might be the best team in the country, or at least in the mix, top three team pretty much across the board, according to most publications. And to have 11 guys drafted, Texas has now gotten to the point where it's a reload, not a rebuild situation. That's a testament to Steve Sarkisian and his staff. So Xavier Worthy, toughest guy to replace offensively. Defensively, the toughest guy to replace is Byron Murphy. A lot of people will look at Tavondre Sweat's contributions in the run game and just how dominant he was. The guy won the Outland Trophy, all right, which basically goes to the big guy Heisman. All right, big guy Heisman's the Outland Trophy, and Tavondre Sweat won that. But if you think about having to account for Byron Murphy on a play-to-play basis, he was impossible to block. Crazy slippery, crazy quick hands, so hard to defend in an obvious passing situation, but he was also rock solid against the run and could do a lot of things with his hands that just guys can't do. So I look at that. I think replacing Byron Murphy is going to be next to impossible. I know Texas feels decent about their personnel along the defensive line, but man, it's going to be a lot harder to replace Byron Murphy than I think any of the receivers that were lost or the weapons that were lost for Steve Sarkisian's offense. Let's move next to the Alabama Crimson Tide, who had 10 players drafted, which is wild. When you think about what Nick Saban has had as far as draft equity, Nick Saban has had 10 players drafted in 7 of the last 8 NFL drafts. Think about that. Think about that. Now, J.C. Latham comes off the board at the beginning, 7th overall to the Tennessee Titans, followed by Terrion Arnold and Dallas Turner in the first round. So three guys in the first round. They also had Mr. Irrelevant, Jalen Key, who was the last pick of the NFL draft. I think when you look at the toughest player that needs to be replaced by Alabama as far as their draft picks are concerned, it'd be easy to say maybe a guy they lost in the portal, maybe it's Caleb Downs, who's now playing football for the Ohio State Buckeyes. But as it relates to just the draft, I'm going with J.C. Latham along the offensive line. We know that Caden Proctor is coming back to Tuscaloosa. We know that Caden Proctor is probably going to lock down one of those two tackle spots. That one I feel pretty good about. But I think Elijah Pritchett, who had a really good spring, and there's a couple other guys they're very excited about the tackle spot as well, replacing J.C. Latham, even though there were moments last year where his play was a little up and down, replacing him, not just as far as leadership is concerned, but as far as just sheer power. J.C. Latham was big and super physical. And while at times, at least early in the season last year, some of the speed rushers maybe gave him some fits, if he got his hands on you, it was over. And that was a real nice thing to have on the right side of the offensive line, knowing that that guy, in a run game scenario, can move somebody off the football. So J.C. Latham, the most difficult player to replace offensively for the Crimson Tide. And defensively, I went around and around and around here. I went around so many different ways on this one. So I'm looking at all the defensive players that were picked this past year for Crimson Tide. I look at Dallas Turner, who was the first defensive player picked. I look at Terrion Arnold, who also was picked in the first round. I look at Kool-Aid McKinstry, who was picked early in the second round. And looking at it all, Chris Braswell and a handful of others, looking at it all, I think replacing Dallas Turner is the most difficult replacement. And part of me, because I think you just became so reliant on elite edge players defensively for the Tide, replacing that again is going to be a difficult thing. A couple years ago it was Will Anderson. This year is Dallas Turner and Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell. So I'm going Dallas Turner, but man, it's by the narrowest of margins. Because I look at the cornerback spot for Alabama, and while I think they have elite talent at that position, that talent might ultimately end up being really, really young. And to be young at corner is not an ideal scenario. They're crazy talented, and I'll always take talent over experience. If I can have an average player that's experienced or a super talented player that's young, I'll take the super talented player that's young. But I think at the same time, the reinforcements on the edge defensively are going to be just fine for Alabama. The questions I have at corner remain, but I think any of the three options that they end up going with, whether it's Mincy or Zabian Brown or Mbakwe, all three of which were highly regarded prospects coming out of high school. I think they're going to be in good shape at that position. So I looked at the end of the line of scrimmage, knowing that Dallas Turner is no longer there, knowing that a guy that could take over the game at any moment is no longer there, and I felt like he was the most difficult player to replace on the defensive side for Alabama. Moving next to Washington, who had 10 players drafted. That's pretty amazing, too. That's tying the school record for the 7-round era. Think a lot of people buzzing about when Michael Penix was drafted. I think Roma Dunze was very appropriately drafted there in the top 10. Absolutely love him. Fautanu, the tackle, got drafted to Pittsburgh. Could there be a more ideal fit? They had a few more guys come off the board a little bit later on, like Edifuon Ulofosio and a handful of others. I look at the most difficult player to replace. How can it not be Michael Penix? I mean, I know the receivers last year were phenomenal, and they had a bunch of guys come off the board as a result. And it'd be hard for me to overlook just how important Roma Dunze was or how important some of those wideouts were. Michael Penix, to me, is a difference maker. And while everybody that watches the NFL is sitting there thinking, man, that's way too early to draft a guy like Michael Penix, those of us that watched every single snap he took in a Washington uniform probably acknowledge that dude's different. And the throws that he executes and the pinpoint accuracy he displays down the field in anticipating throws and throwing guys open, I don't know how you replace that. And while Will Rogers, the likely incumbent to become the starting quarterback for Washington, has a lot of experience, he's been around a lot, has thrown a lot of passes, has been highly productive at the college level, I don't know if the shoes that Michael Penix leaves can be filled. I don't think it's close, by the way. We go back to experience versus talent. Yes, Will Rogers, crazy experienced, but he doesn't have the talent that Michael Penix has. So I think those are by far the most significant shoes that need to be filled offensively amongst the draftees for the Huskies. For the defense, it's Braylon Trice. And there were some good options here, by the way. There were some really good options. And while Braylon Trice, at times last year, the numbers statistically, the pressures, the sacks, they weren't what you wanted them to be. They weren't. He's not crazy twitchy, but the fact that he was always there on the end of the line of scrimmage, and if you look at how opposing offenses had to account for him, he made everybody else on the defense a little bit better. So Braylon Trice, man, I think that is a massive departure and one that will not easily be filled by Jed Fish and the new staff there for the Washington Huskies. The Florida State Seminoles, and it goes to kind of show you just how talented this team was last year. I mean, you really think about just how talented this team was to be in the 10 draft picks. And to think, too, a lot of these guys were transfer guys that were developed from within and became really, really significant difference makers for Mike Norvell and their staff. They had 10 players drafted, and that's phenomenal. It got started with Jared Verse, who went 19th overall, and we'll get to him in just a minute. But just look at just how they littered the top 100 picks. Verse, Coleman, Braden Fisk, Renardo Green, Trey Benson, Jerrion Jones, all picked in the top 96 picks. This was a really talented group, especially at the top of the draft. Then you look at the players that were picked a little later on. Jordan Travis, at 171 overall, going to the New York Jets. Was so happy, by the way, to see his name get called. Love Jordan Travis. He's one of my favorite players, and I'm so happy that he's going to have that opportunity to go play in the NFL, and I think he's going to have a good career. He's a really, really good kid, and I'm certainly wishing the best for him. Johnny Wilson was taken. Jaheim Bells was taken. Tatum Bethune was taken. When you think about the toughest to replace, and this was a tough one for me, because everybody probably wants you to say Jordan Travis, especially noticing how Florida State's team kind of just dropped off drastically when Jordan Travis was injured, and talking about their offensive production and how much of a challenge it was for them offensively when Jordan Travis was unavailable. I think DJ Uiagalelei was one of the big winners in the portal, and I think Florida State was a big winner as a result. And watching him in the spring game, I think his transition into this offense is going to be a little different than the offense that Jordan Travis ran, but I actually think they're in good shape at that position. So the toughest player to replace offensively for me when I watch Florida State is Keon Coleman. Now, he got drafted 33rd overall to the Buffalo Bills. I couldn't be happier for Josh Allen. When you think about contested catches, ball that is a 50-50 situation. Nobody had more contested catches over the course of their career since the time Keon Coleman stepped on campus at Michigan State to the time he finished up last year. Nobody in college football had more contested catch touchdowns than Keon Coleman. That says a lot, because guess what? In the NFL, there's going to be a ton of contested catches that he's going to have to make, and I think he'll do so beautifully. So I love Keon Coleman, and I look at the receiver core that Florida State has at their disposal. And while I feel pretty good about him, I think you got a chance to have a Malik Benson that has a legit, I'm talking a legit ceiling. I think Malik Benson's got a chance to be an all ACC type of contender. I really believe that. But I look beyond that. Yeah, Ja'Kai Douglas, Hakeem Williams, Jaylen Brown, all those guys are really, really good. Portier, Spann, Darian Williamson, all those guys are really good players for sure. But are any as impactful potentially as Keon Coleman? Now, I hope for Florida State's sake, Malik Benson is, but there is a question mark for me in being able to replace that go-to guy at wide receiver in Keon Coleman. And then defensively, it's Jared Verse by a mile. But if you were to ask me a couple years ago, I would have told you Jermaine Johnson's not getting replaced, guys. Like, Jermaine Johnson was that good for Florida State a couple years back. He was that good, that impactful. So being able to replace him is an impossible task. Well, what happened? They go and they find Jared Verse at Albany. They develop him and becomes a complete game wrecker his final 2 years on campus. So while Jared Verse's presence is almost impossible to replace, I'm really optimistic. I am really optimistic about what we've seen from Marvin Jones up to this point. You hear buzz about him being unblockable at times in practice, whether it was at Georgia or at Florida State. So I think they're in a really good spot being able to replace a massive difference maker on the end of the line of scrimmage with a guy that might very well be the next man up. Moving next to the Georgia Bulldogs. A bunch of guys drafted should come as no surprise. But by Georgia standards, 8 guys getting drafted is not that significant. They had 15 just a couple years ago. So maybe, hey, this is a veteran roster that everybody's back. But there are some guys I think that are almost impossible to replace. And the guy offensively that I think you cannot replace is Brock Bowers. You just can't replace that guy because he's so big. He's so fast. He's so uncoverable. There's no one else in college football quite like him. And the fact that he lasted all the way to the 13th pick to me is mind-blowing, because I watched college ball, and look, I'm not some NFL draft expert. I'm not trying to sit here and tell you, well, here's what the Raiders need. Here's what they need to do with him. Here's how they need. I know ball, and I know that if I can have Brock Bowers in my huddle offensively, I'm a better quarterback. He's that good, and he's that much of a difference maker. So replacing him, I think, will be an impossible task. Now, do they have weapons at tight end? Of course they do. Do they have weapons at wide receiver? No doubt about it. I think they're going to be really good at wide receiver, and I think maybe in some ways improved at wide receiver based on what they were a year ago. But replacing the receiving threat that was Brock Bowers is not something that will be easily done whatsoever. And then on the defensive side, a lot of options here. I was close to going Tyke Smith. I was close to going Kamari Lassiter, but I didn't. I think the toughest guy to replace on that Georgia secondary, or really on the Georgia defense as a whole, is Javon Bullard. Now, Javon Bullard got drafted at the end of the second round at the Green Bay Packers, and it might have been one of my favorite picks in the draft. This guy is a heat-seeking missile. He has no cares whatsoever about his own body. He's going to hit you as hard as he can. And he does so time and time again. Has been banged up at times as a result of that. But this guy plays at 100 miles an hour all the time. And there was a presence there in the back end of the Georgia defense. Now, I thought Lassiter, he can lock a guy down on the perimeter. No doubt about it. But I know that if I'm trying to work the middle of the field, I better be real careful for my receiver's sake, knowing where Javon Bullard was on the field. Now, they always recruit well in the back end. You look at some of the guys that are likely going to replace Javon Bullard. Maybe it'll be a committee approach, but I think that guy is so, so good and will be an elite pro as long as he can stay healthy. Very excited to see how things work out for him with the Green Bay Packers. And then finally, the Oregon Ducks. They had 8 players drafted. 8, including, I think, a very surprising pick of Bo Nix at number 12 overall to the Denver Broncos. They had a bunch of guys go, though. Bucky Irving went in the 4th round. What incredible value there. Troy Franklin was a 4th round pick as well. Jackson Powers Johnson came off the board at 44 overall to the Las Vegas Raiders. I need the toughest player to replace on that offense because I think about who's stepping in to Bo Nix's shoes. I'm pretty dang confident in Dylan Gabriel. I think Dylan Gabriel is going to be great. And while I haven't seen him throw a pass in an Oregon uniform outside of a spring game setting, I've seen him throw plenty at Oklahoma. I saw him throw plenty at UCF before that. I think he's going to be able to adequately replace Bo Nix. But I do think at center, you had a real difference maker in Jackson Powers Johnson, one of the best centers in the country last year. So I think he is the toughest guy to replace there offensively, even though I had a lot to choose from, that's for sure. And then on the defensive side, this is where it became very difficult. Because you look at the defensive players, and I feel like they all did a great job, but they rotated so many people defensively. If you watch Oregon, it's like, man, they play 30 guys on the defensive side of the football, or at least it felt like they had 30 guys rolling all the time. I think the guy that is the most difficult to replace is probably Brandon Dorlus. There at the end of the line of scrimmage, he didn't play like some crazy amount of snaps, but when he was in there, you had to account for where he was, could slide inside and out, and did a lot of really nice things for the Oregon Ducks. So I think him having to be replaced after he was picked 109th overall to the Atlanta Falcons will be a difficult task, even though I think this defensive line with all the second-year players that are likely stepping into premium spots, I think they're going to be in great shape, which is why Oregon, I think, might have the inside track right now amongst all the new entrants to the Big Ten. You'd be hard-pressed to say Oregon isn't in the best possible situation to compete early in their new conference. Moving on to Penn State, who had 8 players drafted. Olufoshanu got things kicked off, number 11 overall to the New York Jets. I think he's the most difficult guy to replace offensively for Penn State. The offensive line, I think they're still going to be fine. They're going to be solid. That was a group that was not a liability by any stretch last year, but at times did have some ups and downs. So Olufoshanu not being there behind Drew Aller at left tackle, protecting the blind side, that is a pretty significant guy that needs to be replaced. And then defensively, I think Chop Robinson. Chop Robinson got drafted 21st overall to the Miami Dolphins, probably a touch early for some people that I talked to and some of the guys that evaluated him. But either way, he was a lot to deal with off the edge. When you think about what Penn State had defensively last year, they had a bunch of guys that could flat out pin their ears back and get after you. So replacing Chop Robinson off the edge will be extremely difficult. Moving on to the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Joe Alt was the first player picked at 5th overall. What a great pick from the Los Angeles Chargers, by the way. Doesn't that just feel like Jim Harbaugh? Like, we know Jim Harbaugh. It's like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to just fortify the offensive line like you wouldn't believe. I'm going to go get Joe Alt at 5th overall, even though I might have other needs. I don't care. I need a game changer. I need a game wrecker and a guy that's plug and play for the next 10 to 12 years. And Joe Alt is that. And he's the most difficult guy to replace for sure amongst all the Irish players that were drafted. Other guys that were under consideration, though, Blake Fisher. I thought Blake Fisher at times had some ups and downs. I thought Cam Hart in the back end, pretty good player in his own right. And Audric Estime, if they didn't have 2 really capable backs that are stepping into his spot, I would think he'd be a tough guy to replace. But I love their young backs. I think they'll have a great year this upcoming season. One guy that was not drafted, by the way, Sam Hartman, not drafted from Notre Dame. Can't say it was crazy surprising because the upside and where he might ultimately be down the road is somewhat limited. But man, as far as accomplished players at the college level that don't get a chance to hear their name selected was a little surprising. And too, to think that Ian Book came off the board, what, in the 3rd round a couple years ago? Was Ian Book that much better than Sam Hartman? I don't know. I'll be curious to get your take, Irish fans, because that one surprised me just a little bit. But the toughest guy to replace on defense, it'd be easy to say Maris Liafau. It'd be easy for me to say Cam Hart, but it's not. It's JD Bertrand. JD Bertrand is as solid and as steady as you'll find at the linebacker spot. While he's not the most freakish physical linebacker you'll ever see. They might have a guy now, Jalen Snead, that might be. J.D. Bertrand was as steady and as reliable as you'll find. I think he was a pro before he became a pro, so replacing his productivity and consistency will be incredibly difficult. The USC Trojans, after a 7-win season, had 7 guys picked in the NFL draft, including number 1 overall, Caleb Williams. You know it's where I'm going offensively. You can't replace Caleb Williams. Hopefully, Miller Moss will be great. And by the way, Lincoln Riley, we said you couldn't replace Baker Mayfield either. And all he did was just usher in Kyler Murray and no problem whatsoever, back-to-back Heismans, same position. So it can certainly be done, especially within this offense, but Caleb Williams just meant too much for too long. He's a guy that is impossible to replace. And then defensively, I went Solomon Bird. I think Solomon Bird getting drafted in the 7th round, I might add, was a shock. Solomon Bird, that is great value for the Houston Texans at 238, because if you watch their defense, well, I'm not going to necessarily look to their defense and say, oh man, they should have had a bunch of guys drafted. No. And while I think Kalen Bullock is a fine player, he also got drafted to the Texans. Solomon Bird was one of the few guys that I could rely on almost every week where I knew I was going to get something good out of him. I had a bunch of pressures, didn't always get home. Solomon Bird will be a tough guy to replace there on the end of the line of scrimmage. The Clemson Tigers, Nate Wiggins, came off the board at 30th overall to the Baltimore Ravens. He's the toughest guy to replace for sure. Amongst all their players and pretty much all of them on defense, so it'd be an easy one for me to pick Will Shipley on offense. He was the only offensive player taken, even though I think Phil Maffa might actually be a better fit for what they want to be at the running back spot. I think Nate Wiggins is going to be very tough to replace. I think for as far as cover corners are concerned, Nate Wiggins is as skilled as they've had at Clemson in Dabo Sweeney's tenure. They've had a lot of good ones too. A lot of good ones at corner. I think Nate Wiggins, you can make a case, is probably the best. LSU had 6 players drafted as well. Jaden Daniels, the toughest guy to replace. He won the Heisman Trophy last year. Do I really need to explain it any more than that? But defensively, it's not Mason Smith. It's not Jordan Jefferson. I think the toughest guy to replace would be Mekhi Wingo. And while Mekhi Wingo did have some things with injury every once in a while, man, when you watched him and he was on the field and he was at 100%, he was extremely, extremely good. The Missouri Tigers had 6 drafted as well. Darius Robinson off the edge came off the board in the first round at the end of the first. They're pick 27 to the Arizona Cardinals. He's going to be so tough to replace. But you look at what they lost. And we've talked about this for a while with Missouri. I love Missouri this year. I think they're a really good team and have a real chance to make it to the college football playoff. But think about these positions that need to be replaced. You lose Darius Robinson, edge defender. You lose Enos Rankstraw, corner. You lose Tyron Hopper, linebacker. You lose Chris Abrams-Drain, corner. You lose Jalen Carlisle at safety. You lose 5 players that were drafted in the top 150 picks off the defensive side of the football. That's going to be tough. You also couple that with the fact that you lose Blake Baker. There's a lot of guys needed to be replaced. And then you also have to replace Javon Foster there at offensive tackle as well. So Missouri, a lot to replace, but by far the toughest to replace will be Darius Robinson. And then finally, the Ohio State Buckeyes. We're not going to talk about who the toughest player to replace is for Ohio State, because to me, it's a coin flip between Cade Stover and Marvin Harrison. Partly because I know they have great talent at wide receiver. Cade Stover was a tone setter, so replacing him is insane. But you wonder why Ohio State currently sits atop my number one ranking as the post-spring top 25. If I had to rank them right now, Ohio State would be at 1. Guys, they had 4 players drafted. 4. Think about Texas, who's also going to join them in the top 25. They had 11. Think about Alabama, who's going to join them in the top 5. They had 10. You think about Michigan, who has long had Ohio State's number these last 2 years. They had 13 players drafted. You think about Oregon, 8 players drafted. All these different teams with players getting drafted, and yet Ohio State has just 4 come off the board. You know what that means? Everybody's back. And then in some places, they've actually reinforced their talent with some of the acquisitions that they've made in the portal. I think they've improved at quarterback. I think they've improved in part at safety. They're going to be even better with some of the guys that are getting older and more mature. Ohio State, having just 4 players drafted, is notable, because that means 2024, look out. Ryan Day and the Bucks are coming. Couple of spring games that we want to get to after last weekend's festivities. And while so much of our attention has been on NFL draft and having to replace some of the guys that were drafted, how can we not talk about Dylan Raiola and the spotlight that is likely going to be on him heading into the season for the Nebraska Cornhuskers, albeit spring scrimmage. So sometimes, you know, you can set things up to make offense look good or defense look good or quarterback look good or wide receiver look good. Guys, Nebraska, I think, is going to take a significant step offensively this year. Because if you look at Dylan Raiola, and look, the starting quarterback job is still open. Okay, they haven't decided for sure it's going to be him, but I would be shocked if it's not. He looked really comfortable, didn't he? He looked really comfortable. And when he got on the field, yes, there were some short passes and there were some things, but my goodness, he looked like he was decisive. He looked like he had a plan. He looked like he had a good grasp of what they want to be offensively. So I am very encouraged by what I saw from him throughout the spring game. I'm even more encouraged to know that you can't play quarterback by yourself. So it appears like Nebraska's taken a significant step at wide receiver. Now, they're not 100% healthy right now, but it does look like they do have two legitimate difference makers that were brought in the portal, whether it's Jamal Banks or Isaiah Nair. Banks really didn't do a whole lot this weekend, but you look at Nair and you listen to some of the buzz on Isaiah Nair dating back to his time at Texas, dating back to his time at Wyoming. Now he gets a fresh start at Nebraska. He might be an immediate difference maker, but they're not the only ones. You got freshman Jacob Barney Jr. A lot of buzz with electric plays that he's made throughout the spring. And it did not disappoint when watching him on the field in their spring game. Had that 41-yard touchdown reception on the opening play at the second quarter off the deep throw from Harburg. He beat his guy with relative ease and made that last-second adjustment to reel it in. So I'm very encouraged by what I saw from him. You got Bonner, who had a day. Lloyd, who had a day. I think when you look at the receiver core, they have some versatile weapons that are going to make life a lot easier on their young quarterback. The problem with going with a young quarterback is that sometimes when you go young at that position, you might very well have some issues as far as turnovers are concerned. Now, we're not going to learn a whole lot from a spring game about turnovers and all the things, but if you looked at last year's spring game, there were 6 fumbles in the spring game for Nebraska. Well, didn't see a whole lot of that this upcoming fall, this spring. And maybe that's an indicator of significant growth in that aspect. And you listen to Matt Rhule, you listen to the coaching staff, they have made a huge priority in cutting down on miscues. Yeah, a couple of interceptions in the game, but they did, I think, a pretty good job of taking care of the football. They had 5 drives with 3 touchdowns and without a punt in the drives led by Raiola. That to me is really encouraging. And while I'm very disappointed to see the injury to Demetrius Bell and cornerback Bly Hill, it looked like they both had injuries there in the first half of the scrimmage. Bell went down after he made that catch after that one throw. I don't like seeing that. And I really hope that he won't be sidelined for too long. So injuries, the one dark spot, the cloud that's kind of hovering over what appears to be a very improved spring setting for the Nebraska football team. Colorado was also on the field, and I liked seeing that Coach Prime reiterated his commitment to college football. Okay, people are constantly asking, are you going to the NFL? Are you going to the NFL? Are you going to go follow your sons to the NFL? That's fine. But at the same time, man, like, let's let the guy coach. You know what I mean? Like, let's let the guy coach at this level before we try to move on to the next. Because when you think about what they were last year, Deion Sanders in the spring game setting last year, so much interest. 69 new scholarship players after inheriting a program that went 1-11. It was some ridiculous roster turnover. And while they were improved in 2023, they went 4-8. They have 20 new scholarship players that entered the April portal alone. So there's still a ton of turnover. Turnover at running back, turnover at defense back. And while the scrimmage is tough to generate a lot from because it wasn't great weather, it wasn't ideal situations, you know that they're going to be very involved in targeting LeJonte Wester and you know that Travis Hunter is going to be a dude. We already knew that, right? Take two, watching the offensive line closely, it's going to be a totally new offensive line. 56 sacks given up a year ago. That's the second most in the FBS. 32 scholarship players, though, overall have entered the portal. High-profile exits in some cases, but it does appear like maybe that group collectively can take a step forward. At least I hope they can take a significant step forward as they head into year two of the prime era there in Boulder. A couple big decisions coming out of the portal as recently as this morning, but a couple guys have made their indications known the last couple days. Jaden Rashada is heading to Georgia. He made it official, and there was already a lot of buzz that he was going to be at Georgia. Remember, he started his career at Florida, ultimately decided to go to Arizona State. But I think what's encouraging is that Jaden Rashada understands that he's now going into a role as a backup quarterback. He's going to be competing, of course, with the backup quarterbacks, Gunnar Stockton and Ryan Puglisi. There's nothing to be decided at that point yet, but he'll be in prime position to contend for the starting job next year. He gets to take a step back, focus on his own personal development, and not being forced to potentially play at Arizona State like he was forced to play at times last year. So I think it's a good move for him and a great pickup for Georgia in stockpiling quarterback talent and more depth behind Carson Beck so that they can have a really good quarterback competition next year to see who will ultimately replace Carson Beck, who, speaking of draft, I'd be really surprised if he's not one of the first quarterbacks drafted in the 2025 draft. Miami has added a bruiser at running back in Damian Martinez. I think he's probably one of the best available players in the portal. He made this decision on Saturday. Now, he was terrific for Oregon State last year. And you think about what Mario Cristobal has been. Mario Cristobal, he wants big backs. He wants powerful backs. He wants guys that are going to get downhill and run through contact. And if you look at Mark Fletcher and AJ Allen, the two guys that are competing for the spot at the top, both those guys are really decisive runners. Now they have a more veteran guy in Damian Martinez, step right in, who ran for 1,185 yards and 9 touchdowns last season as a sophomore. He looked at Arizona, he looked at Mississippi State, but going to Miami ultimately proved to be the best spot for him, especially knowing he'll be competing against Fletcher, who's a true sophomore, and AJ Allen, who missed most of the spring recovering from an injury. So I would not be surprised at all if Damian Martinez is the guy there at running back for Miami as they head into this upcoming fall. Dylan Edwards has committed to Kansas State, and I think this is a really big pickup. Because Kansas State has long had a good history with running backs, a really good history. And while Edwards, if you look at the numbers last year in 2023, he now moves a little bit closer to home. The numbers were not exceptional, but he also did not get a ton of opportunities in the very pass-happy approach. And when he did run it, the offensive line wasn't getting a whole lot of movement off the ball. He had 321 yards, 744 all-purpose yards last year for Colorado, but broke out in that game against TCU. He had 177 yards and 4 touchdowns in that game alone. He also ran in a couple track meets too. So a good addition to the track team also, and he'll join a rushing attack with DJ Giddens, who is one of the better players in the Big 12 last year with over 1,200 rushing yards, 323 receiving yards, and 13 total touchdowns. So it'll be very interesting to see how they divvy up the opportunities between Giddens and Edwards, because that could be a really good 1-2 punch there in Manhattan, Kansas. That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. Continue to ask all of you to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show, whether that's on the podcast platform or if you're here with us on the ESPN YouTube channel. We appreciate you guys so much. We have a lot that we still need to get to. The portal will close tomorrow, so we'll be able to tell you exactly who's going in, who's staying in, who's transferring. We'll get more clarity here as the weeks go on where these guys might ultimately end up. And there's going to be some things that we get to here in the next couple weeks that are really fun. Some way too early top 25s. We'll start to have some conversations with coaches. We have a lot of fun stuff in store for summer editions of Always College Football. So keep it locked in right here on the podcast platform or here with us on the ESPN College Football YouTube page. So for all of us here at Always College Football, we continue to appreciate our friends at Holderness and Bourne who have outfitted the show. Check them out. Holderness and Bourne, the best possible golf apparel that you can find. They'll get you taken care of on that site as well. So for all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark, Jake, Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have a tremendous day. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.